Shalom and welcome everyone to the ICEJ weekly webinar. We're so glad you've joined us. I want to welcome you into the studios of the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem here in the Israeli capital. We have a very good show today, just an excellent guest, very informed on Iran. But before we get into it, I just want to take a moment to honor Ron Gavili and all the Israeli hostages that were held in Gaza, those who came back alive, those whose bodies were retrieved. We received the encouraging news on Monday that the last body had been found of this Israeli police officer, very brave Ron Gavili, and he's been brought back and he's being buried today. We're recording just a day before our normal time on Thursday. And we are able to say now that the war, the almost 44 days of war in Gaza and other fronts, this part of it, the war as we know it, is over. We can take off our hostage pen. And it is a miracle from God. When the war started, we started praying every day for the 251 hostages who had been taken on October 7. There were all four others who had been missing since, I think, 2014, two soldiers' bodies and two live Israelis. All 255 are now back. Some of them came back to be buried, but the others alive, and it is a miracle, especially given how cruel Hamas and Islamic Jihad is. But this is an amazing answer to prayer, and we want to thank everyone for praying all this time for this. We were inspired by the words of 1 Samuel chapter 30, when David was plundered by the Amalekites, his wives and others stolen, taken hostage. It said David pursued, overcame, and that David recovered all. And that is the case here. Amazingly, all the hostages home, and the October 7 war, as we know it, is now over. We don't know what's going to happen next. We may have a bit of a dust-up with Iran just within the next couple days. We shall see. But that's our topic this week. Specifically, will the Iranian opposition prevail? There were the media interest in the uprising in Iran over recent weeks. They've seemed to have gone silent. We're trying to figure out the reasons for that. Maybe they don't want to encourage Trump to attack with all news of and accurate news of all the things happening there. But the opposition is still alive, and we have someone who's involved in the effort to bring democracy to Iran, an Iranian, native-born Iranian himself, Khosrow Isfahan. Good to see you, Khosrow.
Thanks, David, for having me. Thanks for opening this program with mentioning our hostages coming back home, finally.
Yes.
That was a true simcha. That was a true joy. I'm really glad you opened the program with that.
Thank you. Khosrow is a senior research analyst with the National Union for Democracy in Iran. You see the initials on the wall behind him. He's a journalist and investigator regarding Iran with a focus on human rights, security, and the Iranian armed forces. You started out 2019 as a journalist and frontline defender of human rights inside his native Iran. He worked with international media, with human rights groups, even with the UN, helping them compile reports on Iranian abuses and even crimes against humanity there. But he had to leave Iran in 2021, just a few years ago. We'll talk to him about that. He first had a position in the UK with BBC Monitoring. 2023, he moved to the States to teach at Colby College in Maine. Later joined the Atlantic Council, but now he's with the National Union for Democracy in Iran. Now, Khosrow, give us a little more on your background, your family, growing up. Were you a Shia Muslim? Exactly, you know, your family's circumstances.
So I was born to activists. Both my parents were activists who fought against the Islamic Republic. My dad was a former political prisoner. He was jailed for 4 years for his activism against the regime, and he survived mass executions of 1980s in Iran by sheer chance. During his time in jail, he was tortured while Quran was played. One of the tortures that he endured was they put them in grave-like boxes and forced them to listen to Quran for hours. And if they moved even a single finger, they would get beaten up. So the Islamic indoctrination never had any room in our household. I grew up in a very secular, religious-free household and never had any interactions with other faiths, because the Islamic Republic constantly monitors and surveils churches, synagogues, everything. If they reach out to someone who comes from a Muslim background, that is seen as a crime against national security. People are getting arrested for having a Bible in their homes, being on a Torah group chat. These literally have happened over the past couple of months. So I grew up in this context. You mentioned when I joined this fight against the Islamic Republic, I attended the first rally of my life when I was 8. My dad took me to the student protests of the year, and it was glorious. We were marching together. My dad, it was the first time that there was a rally against the regime. It was a student, beautiful student uprising that was triggered by a crackdown on local newspapers. People were just demanding a slight change to freedom of speech, and the regime wouldn't have it. We were marching on the street, and this man that I learned everything from and looked up to, when the students started chanting death to the dictator, he raised a fist to the sky to repeat the chant. But the pain and the suffering of burying thousands of friends and comrades in mass graves broke in his throat. He couldn't chant. He turned back to me and said, "If you want, you can chant." And the 8-year-old Khosrow started chanting death to the dictator, and I haven't stopped. In 2009, when the Green Movement started, I was 18, freshman university student. I started organizing rallies, bringing people in, taking them to the streets, keeping them safe on the streets while they protested. And for that, I got arrested, interrogated, all the good stuff that the Islamic Republic does to anyone that defies its theological rule. That
continues. Was the regime that Obama failed to support, the revolution.
Yeah. When we were on the street during the 2009 Green Movement, one of our chants was Obama, Obama, Yaba, Una, Yabama. Obama, you either stand with them or us. There is no middle ground. Mm. There is no middle ground between the Iranian nation and the Islamic Republic. U.S. administrations over the years have failed to see that and have failed to side with the Iranian people. Right now, the current administration is facing the same question. Is it going to side with the Iranian people or stand on the sidelines and watch a nation get massacred because it's demanding liberty and justice?
Yeah, Trump has proven different than Obama on many occasions, and we're just hoping the same is here. Why did you have to flee Iran in 2021?
So since 2016, I started working as a journalist in Iran. It was a calmer period in the country. I had distanced myself from human rights work because there was so much corruption going on among some diaspora groups that I was appalled by what they were doing, how they were conducting human rights work. There was a gap there that I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. In 2019, there was this massive uprising in Iran. The regime increased fuel prices overnight. tripled the prices. Imagine fuel prices being tripled in any country, what it would do to your livelihood. The regime did that without any prior notice. And people knew that they are going to be crushed by the economic crisis. So they took to the streets en masse, and the regime killed them. 1,500 people were killed in a span of a few days. They shut the internet for 2 weeks, and in that darkness, we survived. But that moment, before that, I had hung my gloves. I was like, okay, I'm done. But that moment, I was like, okay, we are getting back to the fight. I started documenting human rights violations, worked with a couple of human rights organizations outside Iran, think tanks, getting information out of the country, securing leaks from the judiciary and government officials at very high personal risks and costs. The abuses that I had to endure to get that information out is a different story for a different time. I don't want to center myself for this interview. But I continued doing that. Then I got my hand into the Islamic Republic's missile program and their drone program and their activities in Syria. So basically, whatever the Islamic Republic was doing and was evil, I was trying to document and report. And at some point, it was not a matter of when, not a matter of if I'm going to get arrested, but a matter of when I'm going to get arrested. And I didn't want to end up in jail and getting tortured and putting others at risk, people who had trusted me with their information. So I got a job outside. I found a position with BBC Monitoring, moved out, worked with them on literally all of the things that I told you about. And that's a brief history of where I come from. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're now in Washington, D.C. with the National Union for Democracy in Iran. Tell us a little bit about this organization, who it's led by, and what's your agenda?
NUFTI is a bipartisan organization. We only try to fight the Islamic Republic based on very clear principles. We want a secular democracy for Iran. We want human rights for everyone in Iran. And we want Iran's territorial integrity to be preserved. That's it. Anyone who agrees with these three principles, who are also upheld by Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi, is welcome and is part of the camp. That's so what we are.
The Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi is involved with your group, and we want to ask how unifying a figure he is in this whole opposition to the regime right now, because some. He's been in Washington a while, and some said he didn't have enough support to really get behind him, but has that shifted?
We are led by the Crown Prince's vision and his words. That's to your first question. And to your second question, some people are stuck in the past. Some people are stuck in their false analysis of Iran. Some people are still stuck in narratives that to start with, we're wrong. The Crown Prince, throughout the past 5 decades, this man has had a very clear message. He's not going to make a deal with the Islamic Republic. And those three principles that I talked about, that's it. That's what he has always called for. He has served this nation. When the Iran-Iraq war was happening, the Crown Prince knew that a dictator, a murderous child-killing dictator like Saddam Hussein is going to destroy Iran. Despite living in exile, he offered himself, he's a fighter jet pilot, he offered himself to fly planes to fight the Saddam invasion. That's how dedicated, that's how principled this man has always been. On whether he is figure that is causing fissures among Iranians. Over the past 3 weeks, Iranians have, not 3 weeks, 1 month now, Iranians have taken to the streets of the country en masse. They have braved guns and bullets, and we are not talking about a handgun. They were shooting at people with dushkas, heavy machine guns that demolishes your body when you're hit with a single bullet. They were shooting at people with these. And people on the streets of Iran were chanting Javid Shah, long live the king. And there is this running joke among Iranians in the country. Those who want a return to the monarchy are chanting Javed Shah, long live the king, and those who want a republic are chanting how louder Supreme Leader Khamenei, Pahlavi is returning. The crown prince has never asked for a position. He is not positioning himself to become king. He doesn't even talk about that. The only thing that he cares about, the only thing that he has offered, is being a transitional leader, someone that people are rallying behind, who is whose name is being chanted on the streets while people are being killed. What is more unifying than that? This nation, the Iranian nation, has gone through a sea of blood, a sea of fire. We have suffered so much. And this pain has unified us into a single fist. We are united and we know who we are marching behind. And that's Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi. There are minority voices who are loud, who are marginal. And by minority, I'm not talking about Iran's ethnic groups or religious minorities, political minority groups, irrelevant people who have ties to the Islamic Republic, who are trying to sow divisions, who are trying to picture the crown prince as irrelevant, not having a base in Iran. People in Iran have proved them wrong.
Yes. Yeah, we met the crown prince about a month and a half ago in Washington. He was a very pleasant man. I think he has a big heart for his country. And I do think the streets in Iran, these protesters have proven that he is a unifying figure. And he's become a rallying point, a rallying cry, even for people who were against the Shah, his father, the monarchy. They may be from other backgrounds, other visions, but he seems to be someone who can help unite the nation right now. The latest reports, Iran International says as many as 35,000 people have been killed over the last 3 weeks, month of protest. There were even reports of 30,000 in just 2 days alone in early January, I think the 8th and 9th, when the crackdown on the protests peaked. And is this accurate, the reports of putting injured people, wounded people in body bags before they were even dead? These are horrible.
So before I joined NUFTI or Atlantic Council and I was with BBC Monitoring, one of the projects that I led on was verifying deaths, protester deaths for BBC. We literally did forensic work. For weeks, I went through videos of dead bodies, bodies of protesters that were demolished by bullets and being washed and prepared for burial by their families. I watched all those videos and compared them with birth certificates and other types of documentation to verify every single death. And imagine doing that for weeks about your countrymen. It was painful. It was grueling. And it wasn't just my work. We were a big team. All of us contributed. But the thing is, what we are seeing these days, it's on another level. The level of brutality, the level of pain, the level of cruelty that this regime has unleashed on this innocent population is insane. The other day, photos came out of a morgue of two infants hit by bullets of the regime. Infants. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine seeing an infant being hit by a bullet? We are receiving reports of security forces beheading protesters, beheading dead bodies of protesters. We are seeing ISIS, Daesh level of violence coming out of the Islamic Republic on the streets of Iran. The level of cruelty, it's insane. You mentioned that they have put people who were still injured in body bags. We have photos of people with handcuffs in body bags. They were injured and put in a body bag. We have photos of people shot in the head in hospitals. Security forces raided hospitals and shoot people in the head. This level of brutality. I have worked on Syria war crimes. I spent years working on Syria war crimes. I'm receiving messages from Syrian friends that what we are seeing coming out of Iran is insane. It took Assad months to get there. The Islamic Republic reached that point in a few days.
They already brainwashed the besieged militia to be willing to massacre their own brothers and sisters, their own countrymen, preparing for this.
Evidence is coming out that some of these militias, they were using drugs. There are videos of snipers on rooftops hitting whatever drug that they are hitting before opening fire on innocent people. The insanity of killing 36,000 people, it's a lot. It's not with a bomb. With Assad regime, he was dropping barrel bombs on people. That was a large chunk of the casualties of that war. The Islamic Republic is setting up snipers on civilian buildings against civilians, unarmed civilians. They look them through that glass, see the face, and pull the trigger. What human can do that?
It reminds me of the reports that the Hamas terrorists who flooded into Israel on October 7 were on certain stimulant drugs and that helped them have more energy to kill.
It's the same nightmare. The same nightmare. We have seen it during the Shoah. Nazis were high on drugs when they were killing and massacring people around Europe in death camps. Hamas did the same thing. A sane human being cannot rape and behead and kill other human beings. The behavior that we are seeing from the Islamic Republic is a genocidal army that is unleashed on world. And it's a threat to the whole humanity. The other day, a senior official with the Islamic Republic said that they are pursuing a nuclear weapon, that they are 2-3 weeks away from a nuclear bomb. A regime that is capable of killing 36,000 innocent, unarmed civilians of its own country. Imagine that regime having a nuclear bomb. This regime is a threat to humanity. It needs to be stopped.
This brutality, it seems to have energized the opposition. Iran is very diverse, different kinds of ethnic peoples. But I saw one report, 90% of the Iranian people are now opposed to the regime. How diverse is the opposition? How strong, how resilient, how united is it right now?
I would divide the answer into two parts. One, the actual opposition that is operating inside Iran, that is fighting the Islamic Republic, that is facing guns and bullets and is shedding their own blood on that soil to reclaim Iran as their homeland. They are united. They are one. They are a single fist in the face of the Ayatollah. They know what they want. They know that they just want the Islamic Republic gone. They know that Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi is the unifying force that is keeping them like a fist. When you're fighting a despot, you need a fist. You cannot poke them with a finger. Everyone cannot be a leader. People have reached that absolute crystal clear clarity that we need to be a single fist in the face of the Ayatollah and take down this whole regime. People in the Iran, in the country, on the ground, who are shedding blood, who are dying for this fight, they are united. They have absolute clarity. When you're facing death and terror in the eyes, when you're looking your enemy in the eye, when you see your blood on their hands, you're not divided. You're united in your resolve for ending this fascism. There are a bunch of lunatics. Either they are paid stooges of the Islamic Republic or twisted by Israel derangement, by Trump derangement syndrome, by Bibi derangement syndrome, hating the guts of the Western civilizations and what the West stands for so bad that they are closing their eyes to the suffering of the Iranian people. They are willing to watch Iranians die than rather see President Trump intervene, overthrow the Islamic Republic, and have a win. Let him have a win. What would that cost you if that win means a whole nation, 90 million people getting liberated? Is your ego more important than that?
Now, I appreciate your passion for this cause and for your people. The New York Times has just reported that several intelligence agencies have told President Trump the Iranian regime is at its weakest point since the 1979 revolution. I think the level of support for it has diminished to perhaps less than single digits within Iran. And is the Iranian opposition going to prevail itself? Does it need this American armada that's arrived in the region, all this military assets, to help take down the regime? How much can the opposition endure? And will they prevail?
Two-part answer. One, there is this video the other day came out of Iran. Security forces have fled from the protesters. They have shown so much resilience that these armed thugs had to flee. There is this woman walking in the background. You hear her voice among the shouts and the chants. And she's saying, thanks God I lived long enough to see these days. That's where the Iranian people are. We have been fighting the Islamic Republic since its inception. On March 8, women in Iran marched against the Islamic Republic and its enforcement of Sharia law on women. In the 80s, thousands were executed by this regime because they were opposing its rule. In 90s, student uprising. In 2009, Green Movement. Come forward. Every year, every cycle, we have been fighting this regime. The Iranian nation has a history that dates back millennia. We have been around. We have been a proud nation that has brought stability to the world. Iran has always been a pillar of stability in the Middle East, except under the Islamic Republic. Jews lived in Iran. Outside Israel, Iran had the largest population of Jews before the Islamic Revolution, where people lived in freedom. Where there was no pogroms, where there was stability, where economy was thriving, people were living there, safe, growing. This regime is a blip in the history of Iran. It will pass. And Iranians, second part of the answer. Iranians will remember who came to their aids. When Israel was striking IRGC commanders during the 12-day war, people inside the country were cheering them. Every IRGC commander that was killed by Israel, we lauded the brave warriors of IDF who took them out. When President Trump took out Qasem Soleimani, the Supreme Leader's chief terrorist, Iranians celebrate that every year. We are grateful for every piece of help and aid that comes our way because it's an unlevel battlefield. We are unarmed. We are not using violence in this fight. It's an uneven battlefield. We need help. But if the help doesn't come, Iranians are going to prevail. We are going to reclaim our homeland. We are going to be, again, a pillar of stability and peace in the Middle East. Mm-hmm.
There are reports that, President Trump has acknowledged publicly that there are back talks to try and find a diplomatic off-ramp to this crisis. And I'm worried about the prospects of him making a bad deal and calling all the ships back and that would be a bad result for me. But what do you expect in the coming days? Are we going to see U.S. strikes based on the information, all the research you're doing, and this is, you're just focused on this day and night. How do you expect this to play out over coming days?
Point one, a lot of people, especially in the United States, especially on the Democratic side of things, think so little of President Trump. I don't. I don't think that he is a repetition of the Obama era mistakes. And I hope that I'm not wrong. I hope that President Trump has the vision and the clarity that the national interest of the United States is in removing the Islamic Republic once and for all. There are people in Washington, some in very important positions of power, who are nothing but copies of Lord Chamberlain, who flew to the Nazi Germany, signed a piece of paper, and thought that that piece of paper is going to save the world from Nazi invasion. It didn't. These lunatics, these useful idiots who are in the capitals, Western capitals, are pushing for another deal with the Islamic Republic, who are whispering in the ear of the US president. I don't think President Trump is going to listen to him. He has absolute clarity that about what is the good of this nation, and he will act based on that.
Yeah, I think this is where we are right now. All these warships and warplanes are in the region now. It has put pressure on the Iranian regime. They will look for an out. I think they're genuinely afraid right now. But we already saw they promised they'd stop killing people, and the killing has continued. You can't trust them. But we'll see how this plays out. We really want to pray for you. Well, last question, how can Christians help your cause?
Raise the voice. A lot of people in the West are ignoring our suffering. When October 7 happened, when the war after it started, thousands and thousands of people marched on the streets of Western capitals, repeating the slogans and chants of terrorist groups like Hamas. Those ignorant people, those useful idiots, are silent right now. I'm calling on you, people who have their heart in the right place. March with us on the street. Be the voice that echoes our voice for justice and liberty. We share the same values. We want the same thing for the world. Stand with us. Echo our voice. Be loud. Be clear. Let us reclaim Iran. It's going to be good for everyone.
Okay. I just want to remind our Christian audience out there, the majority of Iranians and the National Union for Democracy in Iran, the Crown Prince, many other elements of this opposition have said one of the first things they'll do is reverse the animosity of Iran towards Israel, and no more death to the little Satan and the big Satan. And in fact, they'd open friendly relations with Israel. That's also an important reason for us to support them. But this is a just cause. We support you, Khosro. We appreciate your time today. And we're going to stay in contact with you and see what happens through all these developments. That's our time for today on our program. Will the Iranian opposition prevail? We've heard from Khosro. They are strong. They are resilient. They are determined. And it looks like the best moment since 1979 to try and really change the history of Iran back to a more peaceful, loving nation. All right, that's our time. We appreciate you joining us. Join us next Thursday, 3 p.m. Israel time, for the ICEJ weekly webinar. God bless you from Jerusalem.